You get dinged up in last night's game? Or are you a weekend warrior that still thinks you've got what it takes to play, but nagging injuries are slowing you down? It's time to talk to some of the region's top sports medicine specialists. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show. All you ever wanted to know about sports medicine and maybe, just maybe, a little bit more. Here are your hosts, Dr. Brian McCarty and Big Time Mike McGivern on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.
Welcome into the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. He's back.
Hey, he's back.
Dr. Brian McCarty. Sir, it's good to see you.
Hey, it's great to see you. It's great to be back.
Man, look at the weather you brought.
I know, right? You go a little west, and you come back, and you bring beautiful sunshine. You can all credit me for
we bow to you, Dr. Brian McCarty. We bow to you.
I wish I had that much control. That'd be awesome.
It's just really good to have you back. Your fill-ins were phenomenal.
I got a great group of partners and people we work with at Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine. So I'm not surprised.
They impress me weekly. They do. Now, their music choices don't, but the conversation that we have impresses me.
Well, few people can rise to the level of your musical palette. It's difficult.
And we will move on, because that's not a conversation I want to have, because you'll embarrass me. Let me run down the show. We're going to talk some injuries. I have some questions for you with some NFL guys that have gone through some surgeries that I want to talk to you about. 9:15, John Anderson is going to join us, former Green Bay Packer.
Packer Hall of Famer.
Yeah, Michigan Wolverine.
All 1980s NFL team.
Yeah.
He's the real deal, and he's such an incredibly wonderful guy, really, really intelligent, great teacher now. He's a teacher at Brookfield Academy.
Yep.
Does some coaching, I think, also at Carroll. And just an amazing guy.
Yeah, I look forward to it because he's been on the show before. He's been on another show that I do called Faith in the Zone, that he was just really, really kind with his time and just a great interview. And I look forward to talking to him at 9:15.
Yeah, you're going to want to stick around for that, everybody.
Yeah, you really are. Before we get to that, I got a couple of questions with some NFL guys that have had surgery that I don't understand some of these, so I want to go to you with them. Tony Romo, Burlington's own Tony Romo, off-season surgery on his left collarbone, and they're going to try to attempt to prevent future injuries with it. And you're smiling a little bit, but I'm wondering, when they talk about that, what are they going to do to the collarbone to fix it in hopes that it's not going to get injured again?
Well, these, you know, collarbone or clavicle fractures come in different shapes and sizes. The ones that are displaced lead you to some difficult choices in a contact athlete like a football player. So most of them are treated non-operatively. So most of them heal by themselves. You don't need to do anything surgical to it. This was in his non-throwing shoulder, which is a big difference. You know,
correct.
If an athlete like him had it in the throwing shoulder, it probably would be more likely to require surgery if it were displaced. The problem with these injuries is that they do carry somewhat higher risk of re-injury. If even when they heal, which is unusual, most fractures after they heal are very, very solid and they don't tend to re-break. But when you have a 350-pound dude landing on you and putting load through that clavicle, you can re-injure it. Now, he's done that a couple times. So,
correct.
So at this point, I believe they're planning to do a plating procedure to realign the collarbone to its normal alignment. The reason I'm chuckling, or not chuckling, but this is a really difficult question. When you initially see this injury, do you plate it or not? The reason you don't right away is that it creates a stress riser. In other words, the plate's more rigid than the bone around it. So then you have the chance you can crack it next to the plate. So they went, I'm sure, through this whole thing each time you broke it. Should we fix it? Should we not fix it? You know, what do you do? And at this point, having injured it a couple times, they've decided the better thing to do is to repair it, bone graft it, make it strong, make sure it's fully healed, and move forward. And I think that is the right choice at this point.
Can you explain, when you say plate it?
That's
a point I don't really understand.
Okay, so plates are, I'm glad you brought this up. So the collarbone, as you know, is kind of a ribbon-shaped structure, right? It's like a tube. And the plates we're talking about aren't like dinner plates. You know, it's not like you put a bunch of food on it. They're ribbons of metal. Now, these days, you know, when I was a resident, which makes me sound really old, but I'm not that old, but we used to have to bend our own plates, and it was kind of an artistic thing to get it to match the shape of the clavicle. It sounds easier than it is. It's actually very difficult. But now they have pre-contoured plates that are the same shape, and they're awesome. They're very easy to apply, and it's a very fun thing to put to back together because you have these things that match the natural anatomy. It's very easy to get these back where they came from. And in addition, the plating technology, in other words, the way you put screws then through this ribbon of steel, so your titanium, depending on what you use. So you have this ribbon of metal that's going to be on top of the collarbone, and then you use screws to anchor the metal to the bone, and that holds the bone together, and that allows the bone to heal in the correct position. Does that make sense?
It does.
Yeah,
it does.
So that's kind of how that works. And the way plating has evolved, it's gotten stronger and stronger and stronger, so that even though the plates aren't any bigger, the constructs are stronger, and that allows for quicker rehab.
But there's still a risk. See, when you say that, it to me, it's like, why didn't they do that the first time?
Yeah, and they didn't do it the first time because you introduce a couple of variables that you would not like to, such as the possibility, although very small, of having an infection there, having a wound healing problem there, having a non-union. A non-union in fracture terminology means the bones don't heal together. And in clavicle fractures that are touching, the rate of union is almost 100%. If you put a plate on there, it actually goes down slightly. But the difference, the reason you would do it, is it makes it more anatomical, lines it up more normally. So there's a balance there.
Yeah, and their hope is that this will prevent future injuries for him.
Yeah,
and let's hope, because Tony Romo seems like a really good guy. He's a good quarterback. A couple other questions. There's a number of Steelers that had some things done that I wanted to ask you about, because I hear these terms a lot.
Okay.
But I just take it for granted. Oh yeah, he's having that done, but I don't really know what it means. So when they talk about two of the Pittsburgh Steelers having their ankles cleaned out, and you hear that a lot, you know, they're going to clean that ankle out. I don't really know what that means.
Well, it's a very vague way of describing it from our standpoint as surgeons, but what it means is they're going in with an arthroscope. And I've done this many, many times. You go in, you do ankle arthroscopy, which I do all the time, and you go in with a scope, and you can, just like you do in a knee or a shoulder, you can see all the structures inside the joint. Oftentimes, guys who've had recurrent ankle injuries will have scar tissue build up, particularly in the front of the ankle. We used to see it when I was a fellow in New Zealand, and rugby players, you'd see it all the time. They'd get these huge spurs in the front off of the tibia bone, which is the upper part of that joint, right? The tibia is the shin.
Right.
And then the talus bone is the part that moves up and down in your ankle, and that's a more of a round structure. And they would get these huge spurs that would block movement, so they couldn't move it all the way, and it happened all the time. And we used to go in with a scope, and we'd shave back the spurs, and then they'd get their motion back. It's a very quick recovery, and I suspect this is exactly what they're talking about.
When they're cleaning out
an
ankle.
Cleaning it out, meaning they're just smoothing off maybe a little loose cartilage, but oftentimes it's a bone spur and scar tissue in front of the ankle, and they can clean that up arthroscopically, quick recovery, and they'll be back in action.
And when they talk about a knee getting scoped, it's similar.
It is. You know, an arthroscope, for people who don't know what that means, if you imagine having a pen with a little camera at the tip of the pen, and there's a fiber optic cable that puts light through the camera, so that when you put it inside the knee, you can fill it with saline or fluid, right? Kind of a salty water solution, if you will. And you can open the joint up, and then you can look in with this little camera, and you can see everything inside the joint. Okay, this was pioneered by a Japanese guy named Watanabe in the 1950s, and it has become so sophisticated, it's incredible. I mean, we have huge, big flat-screen color TVs that we're operating through. We're not looking at the joint. We're looking at the camera, at the screen, right? And we're doing all this stuff that way. And that's what arthroscopy is, okay? So arthro means joint. Scopy means scope, or, you know, look in with a scope. And that's what almost all of the things that I do are like that.
It's incredible where it's come.
It's pretty cool, yeah.
On a personal, years ago, I had to have my knee drained a couple times.
Yep.
One of the more painful things that I'd ever felt, to be honest with you. And do people have knees drained anymore?
Yeah, sometimes. Normally, to be honest, it's not always that painful. It varies from, injury to injury, person to person. If there's a lot of inflammation, it tends to be more painful. But, you know, we don't just do that anymore. You know, back in the old days, they would, you'd tear your ACL or something, you'd have a big knee full of blood. Really, I mean, I hate to say it that way for people listening, but it's true. And, you know, they would aspirate or drain the knee.
Right.
And that was one of the diagnostic tools, is you drain it, put some local anesthetic in there, and then test the knee before MRI and all that stuff. And, you know, people today, we all kind of just think MRI's been around forever. I mean, it has not been around forever.
No, nope,
it's only been 25 years. It's amazing.
When I had that done, I remember the first time, because she said, look, this is going to be a little painful, and I want you to turn away. Don't look. Well, what do you do when someone says don't look?
Well, if you're smart, you don't look.
Okay. I wasn't, so I looked. And she brought a needle out that was about, you know, seemed like it was a foot long. Yeah.
Am I right? I mean, yeah. Come on now.
Yeah, trust me. Somebody says don't look, you got to look a little.
I don't think so. I think there's a reason they said don't look.
Are you going back on vacation soon?
Hold on a second. So the other thing I was going to mention is, speaking, since we brought all this stuff up, speaking of MRIs, you would think about how things have changed. You know, one of the MRI scanners that Wheaton Franciscan now has at St. Francis actually has the capacity to detect cartilage injuries and by the change in signal. Like it shows a color change in terms of how bad the cartilage injury is.
Wow.
How cool is that? So things are really moving along, and it's an exciting time. I wish our healthcare system wasn't so goofed up, but I mean the technology and the information, as we're about to talk about coming up, is really incredible. So
hey, last thing before we go to break, again on the other side of the break, John Anderson is going to join us. Colin Kaepernick, he's gone through three surgeries in the last couple of months, and you wonder why maybe he didn't have such a good year. He had underwent surgery on his left shoulder. He also had torn ligaments in his right thumb, and he had arthroscopic surgery on his left knee.
Well, this comes back to a point I've made many times on this show, right? Which is when you see guys all of a sudden who used to be good who suddenly suck, and everybody says, oh, this guy's he's a head case, and he doesn't. Well, a lot of times they're hurt.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, the fact of the matter is he's been playing hurt, and he didn't play very well because he was hurt. But if he had all this stuff done, he'd have been out for the year. So.
I mean, surgery on his left shoulder, torn ligaments in his right thumb, and then he had knee surgery on his left knee.
Hey, welcome to the NFL.
Welcome to the NFL.
Hey, one other thing, the biggest news from last night, Golden State Warriors lost a game. Just thought I'd put that out there.
By 32.
By 32, yeah. The Damian Lillard was awesome. If you haven't seen the highlights, go check him out.
He was from the next county he was taking shots from.
So after the break, we've got Packer Hall of Famer John Anderson, one of the best guys you'll ever meet, and he's going to talk to us about when do you say when? How do you know when it's time? This is kind of a Peyton Manning-ish kind of thing, which is a tough topic to discuss at the moment, but how do you know when it's time to retire? And then later on, we're going to talk to him about some other things that are even more interesting, so don't change the channel.
Don't change it. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. This is English Beat, Mirror in the Bathroom. Should have played that for the Home Improvement show, but that's all right. This is
you know
Dr.
What?
Brian McCarver.
If you hadn't played Wind Beneath Our Wings for them, you could have played this.
Hey, that's a beautiful song. It makes me cry, all right? Welcome back to the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. I'm Mike McGivern alongside my co-host. He's back. It's good to have him, I have to tell you. Brian McCarty, Dr. Brian McCarty, our special guest. Had him on this show one other time, and he's just a really good guy. You're a big fan of John Anderson.
Oh, yeah. John's not only was a phenomenal football player, but he's just an even way better person and incredible teacher. Teaches at Brookfield Academy. Taught a couple of my kids. They just love him to death. So thanks, John, for joining us.
Well, good morning. I'm happy to be here.
John, thanks a lot. Really appreciate your time.
Hey, John, listen, one of the things that we were going to talk about was this whole idea of, you know, from a player's perspective, you know, from a fan, everybody says, oh, you should hang it up, or, you know, you should go another year. How does a player decide when to say when? How do you know that time?
That's a great question. I think every athlete struggles with coming up with a good answer. The reality is most players don't have to worry about that because either injury or a younger player comes up and takes their job, and therefore their decision to retire or not has kind of been made for them. And that's a tough way to go. I know up in Green Bay, I was in the locker room with a lot of guys who got cut, and they didn't get a second chance to pick it up with some other team or come back the following year. And it left, obviously, as you can imagine, it left a kind of a scar. And
yeah.
Just you're going out not on your terms. And I don't know how that's impacted them down the road. I'm sure there was an adjustment period, and you know, perhaps everybody just got over it. But I also think that in some cases there's a fair amount of bitterness that players experience towards that club or towards, you know, the league or, you know, the person who made the decision or whatever. And, you know, I think we all have gone through situations where you don't want to have to live with that, right? You want to just kind of go beyond it and kind of get it out of your system. I think football is a little different than the other sports in that there are very few guaranteed contracts.
Right.
You know, so baseball and basketball, just to name two, you know, some of those guys, they get locked into multi-year deals. And if they're not panning out and maybe get released or don't get released, but, you know, they still have that guarantee. They got two more years on their contract and the club is kind of stuck with them. That's another whole situation, right? Football is different in that it's a year to year. So if you don't perform, for instance, this past season, there's no obligation for the team to have to bring you back. But from a player standpoint, I think there's a couple things that I would, you know, say. Number one, if you are in that position where you can kind of make that decision, you got to make sure you got the game out of your system.
Mm-hmm.
That you've had enough and you're ready to move on, because if so many players, you know, they just think, well, I want to come back one more year, and they come back and their performance isn't what it was, or their heart just isn't quite in it. And football is not a game that you can kind of do it that way. You kind of got to be ready to go and give it everything you got every week, or it's going to show.
Yeah, John, how much does that figure in, like what the team looks like? I mean, when you're in it, do you kind of, I mean, I know when, for you, for example, because you were such a great player, were you looking at the roster and kind of looking at the scenario and kind of thinking, you know, if I could hang in here for another year or two, I might get a shot at really doing something with the team? Or does that not play as big of a role? Do you always think you have that shot? I mean, I know you do, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, I was a little, you know, farsighted or something, but I never thought we didn't have a chance, right? Yeah. Every time I drove up Highway 41 to go to training camp, I thought this was going to be the year.
Okay.
My last year was 1989, and for those with a really good memory or you're a really big Packers fan, we went 10-6 that year.
Oh, I remember. That was an exciting year, yeah.
Yeah, won four games by one point, and, you know, the magic man and all that kind of stuff. And so, but that was my last year, and the reason it was my last year is, number one, I had some nagging injuries. And number two, I just felt like my skill level had peaked.
Mm-hmm.
And that if I were to come back, I could probably do it, and most people wouldn't know. And you can play another year that way, and, of course, the income is really tempting and all that kind of thing. But I just felt like, you know what, I don't want this to be a situation where they come telling me one day, you know, we're going to move this young kid up and, you know, you're going to be a backup. And I didn't want to end my career that way.
Yeah.
And plus,
yeah,
quite frankly, like I said, I had some nagging injuries. I had an ankle that was just not responding, and I was going in for treatment day and night, and I didn't know if that was going to be able to come back or not. So after 12 years, I looked around. I thought, you know, my health is pretty good. I want to be able to run in the backyard with my kids. And so that decision was pretty well made for me, or not such a hard decision. And so I took a couple of months just to think it through after the season was over. And I think, you know, you sometimes, a lot of players do that. And long about March, you start thinking, well, geez, you know, my body's feeling good and all that kind of stuff. But I was smart enough to pull the plug a little bit before they allowed that to happen.
We're talking to John Anderson, former Green Bay Packer, Michigan Wolverine. John, when you have somebody like a Calvin Johnson with the Detroit Lions that, you know, most people would think that he's got another 3 or 4 years if he wanted to play, and for him to say, I think it's time that I step back, Did you have more respect for guys like that that say, look, I've given this game a lot. It's given me a lot as well. I've got security for my family, and I can now step away and enjoy, you know, my life. I have respect for guys that do that, and I'm wondering from a former player's perspective, did you sit back and scratch your head and say, look, you had another big year. You've probably got more years left, or do you respect the fact that he thinks it's time?
Well, I think everybody's different. And like I said, I think everybody has that feeling when they have those quiet moments at various parts in the day of saying, you know what, I think I've run my course with this profession or this, you know, athletic part of my life. And it's something where you kind of got to, you know, you got to get with yourself a little bit and hear from other people and just use some good sounding boards and get some good counsel. But like I said before, the reality is you got to be able to walk away and not say, geez, next year I could still be playing. Now, I did that. You know, when I was watching TV the following year, it was really hard not to say to myself, if I were out there, here's what I would have done.
Yeah, for sure. I can imagine you must do that for a while, right? I mean,
well, that first year for sure. In fact, your clock is still, you know, Sunday mornings you wake up early and you think, hey, I don't have a game.
Yeah.
You know?
So that,
you know, I've eaten breakfast. No, I'm not eating breakfast at 8 o'clock before a 12 o'clock game, and you know, all those kinds of things. And so it just takes a time to get out of your system. And that game is so demanding and so consuming, and yet it has such rewards that there is a little bit of a withdrawal. And the other thing I think is somewhat important is how you have prepared for that decision too.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you that. How early do you start planning? I mean, you may have started planning early, but I mean, does the average guy start planning about what he's going to do next or not?
Well, I've got kind of a funny story about my rookie year. Okay, so I'm supposed to go up there, I don't know, in the middle of July or something, and the first thing we got to do is these physical fitness things. Well, I'm living at home with my mom in Waukesha, right, and I'm going to drive up there like 2 days later. And so I'm working out really hard to make a statement, you know, when these physical tests come along. And she asked me to mow the lawn. So I'm mowing the lawn, and I go to mow the lawn, and I pull the thing, and I don't know how this happened, but I stepped down from the lawnmower, but I put my foot underneath the mower, I chopped my toe, okay?
Oh, my goodness.
So I look down, you know, and I look at my I had a leather pair of sneakers on, and I look down, I see the cut going through the front of my toe, and I'm thinking, that's not good. Well, you know, 5 seconds later, the blood comes. I go get stitches and whatever. So the long story short is I'm going up to Green Bay, and I've got to run, and I've got this bloody toe, and I'm thinking, my career isn't going to last very long at all, right?
So, can you imagine Clay Matthews cutting his mom's lawn?
No, I can't.
Hey, John, we have to get to a break here in just a second. That's an amazing story. Just one question for you. Can you imagine Peyton Manning coming back to play again?
Boy, I tell you what, he's got so many things that he's done well. And to go out in this, most players don't get a chance to do it like he has the opportunity. He's ran his course. He's going out on top. If it were me, there's not much to decide here. But like I said, you got to make sure it's out of your system. Otherwise, you'll have regrets down the line.
Yeah.
Well, that's awesome. Hey, let's get to a break. John, can we hold you over for one more segment?
Sure.
That's excellent.
Awesome.
We're talking, our special guest, he is a former Green Bay Packer. I was a big fan of his when he played Green Bay. Not so big when he played for Michigan, I just got to tell you, because, you know, being a Badger guy. But I always loved watching John play. He is John Anderson, and we'll continue our conversation with him on the other side of the break. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. I found that essence rare. I get a musical education every time you come in.
No Barry Manilow today, my friend.
Well, you don't know what you're missing. Our special guest, John Anderson. And again, this is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. I'm Mike McGivern alongside Dr. Brian McCarty. Our special guest, former Green Bay Packer, John Anderson.
Yeah, and John, I want to start by telling you that I think any player that plays as hard as you did for the Packers, we admire you playing, whether you're at Michigan or Wisconsin or anywhere else.
Wow.
Hey, it's true.
It is true. But
hey, so, John, listen, one of the things that I really wanted to talk to you about, and I know this may be difficult for you to describe, but with all of this information coming out about concussions and chronic traumatic encephalopathy, which is, you know, clearly becoming more and more of a health hazard issue from recurrent head trauma, how do you think that this information that we have today would have affected you when you were a player? If you were a player and you're in the middle of your career and you're getting these news flashes all the time about these guys that have this issue, how would that have affected you as a player, do you think?
You know, it's really hard to say how I would have reacted. I don't know. I think speaking to the whole issue, I think we just need to rely on good science, and that's got to direct everything, I think, down as it goes forward. You know, I know a lot of players, you know, who are just fine.
Yeah.
There are reports of players who have had, you know, problems with this issue. And so I think just more needs to be done. I think there's a great hope out there that the design of the helmet and the technology can be a huge factor in minimizing concussion at all levels. But, you know, I think we're still in the early process of this situation. I think I've spoken before about just the game itself is there are so many great attributes that can be learned from the game that I certainly want it to continue to thrive, to be available to kids of all ages. And but the reality is it will be determined, I think, by good, true science. And so I think that's still down the road a little bit.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I read an article this morning about one of the researchers at Boston University and others. Neuroscience, as you well know, you're a science teacher. You're aware of these things, but neuroscience is exploding. It's the advances in terms of understanding neural networks and how things work and even the repair mechanisms. People didn't realize how much repair can occur in the right circumstances. He was indicating that he believed that there would be a test available within 5 years for living people for CTE. And I think if that's true, that could be a real mark change in terms of how the game is played, how its rules are designed. So the reason I was asking this question is I was thinking about, you know, if you're a quarterback or a linebacker, you're on a bad team and it's toward the end of the year and you've taken a couple headshots like you do, you know, are you less likely to go in the hole?
I don't know.
You know, because, I mean, you never thought about it. I mean, we wouldn't have had to, right?
Right.
So I just was curious if from your perspective. I know it's hard to make that judgment, but it's hard to believe to me that it wouldn't affect the players in terms of their recognition. If they get a shot, let's say you're a quarterback, get a shot, and you hit your head on the ground, you know, you got to be thinking, right?
Well, you're thinking that way all the time. I mean, football has that component of injury associated with it, whether it's head or neck or, you know, knee. There is a serious risk factor, which is why, you know, the average age or the average career is a little under 4 years, I guess, at this point.
Yeah.
So, you know, to go back to where we started about retirement, for players who aren't contemplating what they're going to do after football, it's really shame on them because it's going to happen. It's just a matter of when. And if you're the average player in the NFL, which is saying something, you're going to play 4 years, okay? Chances are you're not going to make enough money in those 4 years to sit back and retire and kind of be on your own for the rest of your life. So that has to be in your mind. Okay, what is going to happen next? How am I preparing either by what I did in college or in the off season by some sort of work component, you know, some sort of internship, some sort of training program to maybe not be the job that I'm going to eventually end up with, but maybe I can rule out the job because, you know, when I tried it for that off season, I didn't really care for it. And now you don't waste your time when you do retire thinking this is what I want to do. So, you know, unfortunately, what's happening with players in college now is, you know, if they're really seriously considering a run at the NFL, they're kind of dropping out or lightening their load considerably their second or their last semester of their senior year, right, to get ready for the draft because they want to perform well at the combines and all that kind of stuff. But the reality is you can do both. You know, that option sometimes I don't think is presented to these kids. It's like, hey, you got to get out of school so you can devote yourself to, you know, getting ready for the draft. I'm thinking, well, no, you can. You did it during the season. You went to school and you played football games, right? You can certainly work out and still get to class. But I hear of more and more college kids who are, you know, devoting themselves for these months of January, February, March, leading up to the combine and then the draft, so that they can put their best foot forward, which is certainly what you want to do. But I think at the expense of maybe finishing your degree or at least getting another 10, 12, 15 credits towards your degree. You know, we all think we can get the degree later on. Well, later on arrives and then you start kicking yourself.
Right.
Saying, geez, you know, I don't really know if I want to go back to school now. I'm 26 years old, right? And so now you kind of bump around without that college degree, which in my line of thinking is still carries weight out in the employment areas of business and so forth.
Well, that's why it's helpful to have somebody like you to talk to on the shows like this, to tell high school and college athletes about that difference, that the, you know, there is a different perspective out there. So, hey Mike's got a quick question for
actually
you.
It's for you. You would ask John that question about, now that we know what we know,
yeah,
would he have played different? Can you imagine knowing what we know now back 10 years ago? As you're a doctor and for a lot of the high school teams here, how would that have changed how you would have approached some of the things that you do on the medical side, especially with high school football teams?
Well, to be honest with you, I don't think it's changed that much in the last 10 years. Our guidelines have always, I mean, you can only, you know, as John Anderson just mentioned, you really need good science to move forward. And when you see the results, you just have to respond to the results. You can't look at them and go, oh, let me explain this away by this, or I'll explain this away by that. You have to look at the data and say, hey, we got a problem here, and now we need to address it. And I think that's what's happening in youth football and college football and even pro football. Just the question is, you know, how much is going to have to change?
Yeah, no doubt. Hey, John, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. It's always great to have you on these airwaves. And again, appreciate your time today.
Yeah,
thank you so much,
John. What an honor to have you on. Thank you again.
Okay, good talking with you guys. We'll see you later.
You bet. We'll get to a break. Other side of the break, Dr. Brian McCarty and I will continue. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. That's The Clash, Brand New Cadillac, brought to you by Dr. Brian McCarty. Did you get a new brand new Cadillac?
I did not.
No, you did not. I didn't need one.
I had The Clash.
Are you bringing your car out anytime soon, by the way?
My fancy car will not be out of the barn for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's smart.
It's about tax day. It sort of offsets the incredible agony of tax day.
That's awesome.
Bring my little sports
Don't
car
get
out.
Fooled by this. Spring is not here.
Never fear, my friend. I've been here a long time.
Just making sure that you still remember that. Speaking of that article that was put out that you had talked a little to John about, but researchers saying in possibly 5 years that CTE tests will be given to living, to people that are alive, and that's a game changer. Man.
Well, it could be. It could be, you know, because it'll identify people who've had injury. And if we know that people are suffering from a condition that could affect their mental capacity later in life, and this is still an if at this moment, but if we do know that, how would we continue to do this at the collegiate level, for example? You know, one of the articles I sent you was a 25-year-old guy who had a couple of bad concussions, had chronic headaches, and he had significant symptoms now. So people who are out there who think, oh, geez, you know, I had a concussion and I'm fine. I mean, you're not the one that I would say is at high risk for this kind of thing at all. But for this particular individual, he was 25 years old, and he had CTE, clearly, on his autopsy. So, you know, this is a serious issue. Does it get too much play? Well, we'll find out. I mean, you know, time will tell. I can tell you, fortunately, our eyes are open to the issue. And I think that's the most important thing for any of these issues that come up that seem inconvenient to us. We don't want to hear about them. Well, you know, you got to open your eyes and see what it is. That's how we found out that, in fact, the sun was in the center of our solar system, not the Earth. You know, so, you know, the things change, and you gotta take good information and roll with it. I just want to give a quick shout out to Larry Pesch. Larry sent us a great email about listening to John Anderson on our show and thanking us for the great show. Larry is a huge part of Brookfield Academy. He's moved on, but just wanted to thank him for the feedback.
He's a really good guy.
Oh yeah,
I've got a couple of stories that. I'll tell you one day that he is one of my favorite. Hey, getting back to this article you sent me, and I'm sure you would agree with this, but Robert Stern, and he's quoted, "This is a very exciting time in neuroscience. There's never been a more exciting time in our study of the brain. They are just making leaps and bounds." And you made a comment during the break that said, look, the horse is out of the barn on this thing because of the knowledge and the education that we have now of the problems with this, and there's no putting that horse back. Can't,
nope.
Nor would you want to.
No, but you'll see the same thing we've seen with, and I don't mean this as any sort of a thing, but same thing we see with cigarette smoking, same thing we see with other issues that have come up where there'll be a backlash against the science that, you know, this isn't for real and this is all bogus and look at these studies that show that. And over time, of course, the evidence becomes overwhelming and then you can't say anything different. But look, at the moment, we are doing everything as a sports medicine team to keep the players safe as we can possibly keep them. And I think we're doing a good job. I think the coaches have been really receptive. I think the players and the parents have been very receptive. And as we often say, you know, we've tried to make the game safer than it's ever been. I think that's true. It's just now a question of, you know, is there more information that needs to come? Do we need to change some rules, I guess, is the bottom line, to try to protect the players even more.
You know, in one of the studies in this article that you had sent me, another risk factor is participation in youth football. Athletes who began playing tackle football before the age of 12 have significantly worse problems than other players. And you know, we've had that conversation on my high school show with a number of guys, and one of the themes and one of the reasons we do the Wisconsin High School Football Coaches Association is to really get the message out to some of the changes that have taken place in youth football. And, you know, they would come to the table and say, look, we've made all these changes with our practices, with our equipment, and we don't see that there's a big difference as far as we see the numbers going down as far as concussions. And that's what they would say if they're sitting at the table. Your response to that?
Well, I mean, the data doesn't really show that it's gone down per se. And now the tricky thing here is that the sensitivity to the diagnosis has gone way up. So what we used to count as just a little ding, you know, a guy would get up and go, oh, I'd shake it off, right? We now count as a concussion. So it's a little bit misleading in that regard. But what I would say is this. Keep your eyes open. Keep moving forward with the right information. I think the changes that are being made in practice are really good. I think it's probably going to happen, whether people like it or not, that youth football is probably going to go to a touch system rather than a tackle system, which I think is perfectly fine. And, you know, are they going to learn tackling when they're five? No, but they're also not going to get head injuries when they're five either.
So, right.
I mean, these things evolve. Look, you know, you look at MMA. I mean, the whole point of MMA is to give a concussion. You know, so a lot of these sports are in boxing is the same way. But, you know, horse racing used to be the most popular sport in the United States. And, you know, obviously it's not anymore. So the things do change. And we love football. I'm a huge football fan. I'm a huge football advocate for the game, and I love it. But I'm also a fan of the truth. And if you know that there are issues, you just got to keep your eyes open, try to make it safer, and try to minimize the damage that, you know, that could be done. And we all accept that there are some risks in life. But if you all knew that when you were, you know, drinking Gatorade or something, that it would cause a health problem, you'd probably think twice before you did it. And for the Gatorade people, I'm not saying that's the case. I'm just using it as an example.
Yeah, you didn't use Badger Max. That's important.
Of course not.
In your, I can tell you, what an exciting time, an interesting time. It changes literally weekly in the field that you're in. I mean, somebody is it's unbelievable. Well, I don't know how you keep up with it.
I'll tell you what, people who are listening to this show, I hope you'll do yourself a service and start paying attention to what is happening in science in general. The explosion of information in science in general is absolutely staggering and exciting as can be. Get yourself a little educated about it, and you will find there are amazing things happening. I mean, they just found gravitational waves. People say, well, what does that mean? Well, that's like an enormous confirmation of a huge principle of physics. These are groundbreaking discoveries that will change the way our species moves forward. It's absolutely amazing.
We have only like a minute and a half left. The next big thing in what you do, what are you looking at down the road that you're going to go, man, when this happens?
It's going to be stem cells. The big thing with us is stem cell research, and there it's really close. I mean, not like 2 or 3 years, but the science is already there. Just a question of how do you make it more reliable. But using stem cells to, for example, cure diabetes, make a new pancreas for someone with diabetes that works normally, its disease is gone. It's over. This is what science does if you pay attention to it. You know, same thing that happened to smallpox. We got rid of smallpox, immunizations and things. That's the kind of stuff that science does. And that's why the scientific revolution changed the world. It's awesome. Really exciting time.
It's good to have you back.
Hey,
sir.
Thank you. Thank you. And wonderful to be back.
Yeah, you bet. It's always a pleasure to
next week,
have
by
you.
The way, we've got Dr. Pennington and some of our athletic trainers, and they're going to talk a
big
whole
show.
Lot about really how team sports, the medicine team works. It's going to be very cool.
Well, I look forward to seeing him. He is the doctor of choice over at Greendale Martin Luther.
Yeah.
And he does a great job with the school where I coach. So we're down at St. Catherine's tonight. Wish us luck. We need
it. Very good luck. And best to everyone. Have a wonderful weekend and enjoy my weather that I brought you.
It's so nice. He's Dr. Brian McCarty. Thanks for listening. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM. The Fan.